You're listening to the Prepared Homestead Podcast, equipping you to build a self-sufficient homestead in uncertain times.
We're your hosts, Sean and Monica Mitzel, coming to you from Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm in the mountains of northern Idaho. We're glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, for our main topic, we're going to be discussing goal setting for the homestead. This is a really important topic. This is key, and it's critical for success in homesteading, in achieving the things you want to achieve. So we're going to discuss this today because I think it's really important. I think it's something that's missing. And, you know, you can go to the homestead community and the back to the land and sustainable agriculture, and you can find so much great information out there. You really can. You can find lots of how-to information in many different places. But I think what a lot of people are missing, or what they're really trying to figure out, is how do they get stuff done?
Yeah, and how do you take all those how-tos and put them together in one cohesive plan?
Exactly. And so this is the topic of today. And I think this is going to help people get stuff done.
Instead
of just having a dream, it's a path to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And not that dreams are bad. I mean, we promote that. You need to have a dream or a vision or, you know, whatever you want to call it. In order to realize that, though, you need to break it down into goals and planning and project management, and all those things are very critical. So that's kind of what we want to hit today, as far as goal setting for the homestead. I think we should probably start talking about having a dream, starting with a dream or vision, and how that's okay.
Yeah, dreams and visions they're kind of the catalyst for what you're going to be setting out in your goals and your routines and all of that. It's going to help you determine how to get there. Sometimes our dreams and visions are pretty crazy, but you can still write them down,
even
if they're a little out of reach, because it doesn't matter.
And I think it's important to differentiate between a dream and some kind of utopian ideal.
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about, our dream is to end
world hunger,
and we want peace on earth among all the nations. Okay,
right.
That's impossible. That isn't a utopian ideal. Unfortunately, you have human beings involved.
Right.
And that's not possible. However, dreams are certainly possible, and you've said this many times. It's not an end. A dream is not an end state.
Right.
It's the journey there, and sure, it does look like something, and you can have it be attributed to a concrete thing. I mean, we want our homestead to look a certain way, to produce a certain amount, to help us live our lives in certain ways, and there's certainly metrics and things like that we can point to. But when we talk about dreams and vision, we're not really looking at metrics per se. It's like the ideal setting that we are looking for.
It's kind of what you see, what you look at, what you would want to have and be part of in your own homestead. It's your dream about what you could have in a realistic way. It's not completely
sure
pie in the sky, like, oh, we could do this and we could do that and let's add this and let's add that, and it can start getting out of control after a while.
Right. Now, one thing that we have to differentiate as well is the dreamers. Mm. Okay, the dreamers from those that have dreams and work towards accomplishing them. You know, why is it that a lot of dreamers never accomplish their dreams?
Because they sit around dreaming. It just stays a dream, and they never sit down and go, okay, how can I make that dream a reality? Or is this actually achievable for me?
Right.
Or how can I make it achievable for me?
Right.
What hard work do I need to do in order to achieve what I want to do?
Right. Right. And that's totally key, because you have personality types and there's nothing wrong with this per se, but they usually end with the dream. They dream all the time, like you said, but it never gets past that.
Right.
And that's not good.
No.
That's really not good. I mean, you ever talk to somebody who just sits there and says, yeah, I want to do this, and I want, this is what I want. I want to build this empire and blah, 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 blah. But they never do anything.
Right. Nothing's ever getting done. It's almost better to have something a little bit smaller and actually achieve it.
Yes.
you actually get there. And then you go, oh, okay, that wasn't so hard. Now I can do a little bit more.
Right.
It's better to do it in baby steps if you know, rather than just dream and never do anything.
Right.
Now, I'd rather people have bigger dreams and push themselves and actually sit down and get it done.
Right. Beyond what they thought they could do.
Absolutely.
Right. So we're advocates of dreaming.
Yep.
And we're even advocates of writing it down. It's great. I mean, if you can give yourself a, you know, your one-page dream that you write down and refine and think about and dream about, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because then we can sit down and go, okay, how can I actually achieve that dream?
Yeah. Well, and it's motivating. And when I sit and read our dream, I can see it.
Oh, absolutely.
I can see it. And I go, okay.
Feel it.
Yeah. And I, you know, we really can make this happen. Now, is it going to, it could take years.
Sure.
To truly make it happen. But it's years of blood, sweat, and tears and hard work.
Yes.
And
planning and managing and getting stuff done and keeping at it every day.
Yeah. And you know, and days where you go, huh, we got nothing done today because life got in the way.
Right.
And those days are okay, and they're going to come. And days where you go, oh, my word, I just don't know if I can do this anymore. It's so hard.
Right. Days where you lose motivation.
Yeah. But again, you go back to this vision, and you go back to your reasons why you're doing it, and it's sparked again.
Right. So hopefully this is motivating because we're motivated. We're motivated to accomplish our dream, and we're going to share that with you.
Okay, so this is something that we have this dream written down. This is not me just making it up as I go along. This is something that we together have talked about and have established in writing. Now, of course, we've added to or taken away from our vision and our dream because things always change and morph along the way.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You have to be flexible.
Right.
Don't be like, well, no, that's what I said I was going to do, so I have to do it. Maybe you realize, you know, maybe you get goats thinking that you're going to have a small goat dairy, and you realize, I really don't like goats.
Right.
And that's okay. So
your dream can change.
Yes, your dream can change. And it should.
And it will.
Yes. And part of being a homesteader is flexibility. I think part of being a successful person is to be flexible.
Sure.
Because we never know what opportunities may come that we weren't expecting in the first place.
Right.
And that's definitely happened to us. So, you know, so be aware when we're reading our vision right now, this isn't exactly the same vision we had a year ago.
Right. And it probably won't be the exact same vision we have a year from now.
Exactly. It may even change in a few months. We just don't know. And,
right.
But we're okay with it. And this is... A lot of this has stayed the same, but not all of it.
Right. So some, like a lot of this, like you said, will stay the same, and we will see this someday.
Yes.
In fact, we see some of it already.
We do.
It's
and
exciting.
It is exciting. I enjoy where we are and where we live and what we're doing and the people that we've met through the journey. And daily, we're meeting more people and helping more people, and that's really exciting for us.
Absolutely.
Okay. So here we go. Sovereign Sunrise Permafarm has a beautiful, lodge-like home surrounded in God's beauty and bounty. The polycultural nature of the property is filled with multiple species of livestock working in conjunction with working animals and us to provide delicious and very healthy meat. You will find pigs in forested paddocks, goats and sheep in a paddock shift model on a diverse silvopasture, rabbits in tractors eating fresh grass and fertilizing along the way. Poultry working partners preparing ground and keeping bug populations in check, foraging amongst the plenty, working food forests and dropping nutrient. Livestock guardian dogs are found protecting the animals and keeping the predators at bay. The terraced food forest and linear food forest are stable and self-supporting with their own mulch makers, pollinator attractors, nitrogen fixers, and dynamic accumulators that support dozens and dozens of diverse, productive fruit and nut cultivars that provide an abundance of food for humans and animals. Annual gardens are planted each year, providing delicious, nutrient-dense vegetables and herbs. Beehives are healthy and provide so many useful functions in tandem with our homestead. Forage is planted so prolifically that the system has become almost a closed loop of forage production and waste all working together synergistically. The water flows have all been set up in systems that work passively with springs, rainwater catchment, swales, and ponds all working together to provide the nourishing effects of water to the farm. Sitting on the back deck, overseeing the majority of the homestead is stunning to the eyes and aromatically pleasing to the nose. Trail systems throughout the property offer an experience with nature, a variety of birds singing from three kinds of pines, cedar, firs, larch, birch, and aspen, and dozens of understory species. Moose, deer, mountain lions, wolves, snowshoe hares occupy the outer zones of the property. A plethora of beneficial insects can be seen and heard in and amongst the trees. Bushes and flowers give an unmistakable natural feel to the land. The lodge and property are perfect for the family. Many opportunities exist for farmstead enterprises and other ventures. The farm produces nearly all of the food required by the family. Additionally, we have a successful business helping others move towards self-sufficiency in homesteading. We have a successful homestead bed and breakfast where people can come to relax and see our homestead. We also have a CSA where we supply other families with clean, nutrient-dense foods. In the wintertime, we get to slow down with the rhythm of the seasons, relax, and let wood heat from the fireplace warm our souls.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's a beautiful picture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to go visit that place.
Fortunately, we live in it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, we're working toward all of these things. We've planted many, many plants, trees, shrubs, support species, and plan on planting a lot more this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that for sure. I mean, we are working hard towards that dream. And we're making progress.
Absolutely.
We're not there yet, of course. We've got a long ways to go. In some ways, in other ways, it's like, hey, you know what? We're there in a way.
Well, yeah. Like I love sitting on our back deck.
Absolutely,
I love looking out at our homestead, and we really do have a view of our homestead. I mean,
it's
up above a little bit, and we can look down on it and look down at the pond, and of course, the beautiful mountains of northern Idaho. And
yeah, it's really wonderful.
It is.
And we're working on creating that bounty that comes from the land, which in many ways we're there, and in other ways work yet to be done.
Yeah. I mean, our meat and eggs are fully provided for. We get our milk from our goats, and obviously they're slowing down now, but we don't buy milk from the store. And
right.
So
we use what we have.
We use what we have. And then as spring hits and we start planting our annual garden, we'll start having vegetables and things all through the summer and be able to save that through food preservation.
Right. So that's important. It's important to have a dream. And again, we recommend you write it down and refine it and think about it and rewrite it and do it some more.
Yeah, and it should invoke some feeling. I mean, you know, maybe you feel a little cheesy. I don't know, writing something that's descriptive, but it should invoke feeling and it should paint a picture for you so that it becomes more and more real.
Right, exactly.
In your own mind.
Right, and you know me, I'm not tied to emotions or think that we should think emotionally.
I know.
But when you dream, you're right. I mean, it should invoke emotion.
Yeah.
And then it's the, you know, the real hard work to get us there that, you know, maybe is a little bit more concrete and
right now you're down
less
to
emotional
nuts and bolts.
That's right, accomplishing the task.
Right,
but with a dream or a vision is then developing a purpose. Well, why do you want that dream? You know, what is it you're trying to achieve? You know, why are you doing what you're doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Because without that why, without a true understanding of why you're doing something, it's very easy to lose motivation when the hard work to get to your dream hits you.
It's very easy.
And it will. And so it's those days where not only reading your vision, but understanding why you're doing what you're doing will help push you through those days. And like for Sean and I, because it's funny, I think each of us at one time or another just goes, oh man, it would be so much easier just to, you know, just pull back from everything. And then the other person says, yeah, but remember, this is why.
Right.
This is why we're doing this. And this is our dream. This is our vision. And this is what God created us to do. I mean, we really feel like we are doing what God has intended us to do. And he's prepared us for all of these years. And we're finally living out what we want to live out. And the days that it's hard or we're discouraged or we feel like we're not accomplishing anything, the other person is able to go, yeah, but remember why.
Right.
Why we're doing this.
Absolutely. So some of those purposes, you know, why are we doing what we're doing? You know, we talked about the freedom that homesteading provides, and that's a really big deal for us.
Yes, it is. It's a huge deal.
Freedom in homesteading is based on certain things. I mean, you know, we're all limited in that, of course. Unfortunately, we have federal, state, and local regulations that we all have to follow. And, you know, we're not against every single one of those, but we're largely against the overreach of those things. But there's still a whole lot more freedom in doing what we're doing than, say, I don't know, living in a, you know, working in a cubicle and buying our food from Safeway.
Well, yeah, you don't have the dependence on the system like you would have if you were living in the suburbs or in the city. And instead of going to a cubicle, we go outside to go to work in the sunshine, you know, and it's healthier. I mean, overall healthier, even if you're not growing your own food, it's still healthier to be working outside than it is to be working in an office. We enjoy the freedom of coming out and not having to having to have neighbors right next to us. We like being able to have some space and do what we want with a large plot of land.
Right. Yeah. So that can be very important to some people. They want some space. It's not that they don't like people, but they want some space.
Right. We love people.
Yeah.
Most of the time. No, but just not all the time. And you know, when you look at neighborhoods, there's a lot of times there's so many restrictions within a neighborhood that you lose even the freedom to grow your own food.
Right.
You lose your freedom to utilize vehicles or have livestock guardian dogs, even if you have a couple of acres, you know, because, there's
barking.
They're barking.
Yeah.
So the freedom that just comes with having our own piece of land where we can decide what we put on here and what animals we have. And when we want to see people, we have a lot of people over.
Right.
Frequently.
Yes.
You know, we have people out here. We invite people to our home and we go out and see other people. So it's not that we aren't people.
Right.
We just like our space.
That's right. And I think it is an honor and a privilege to work a piece of land.
Absolutely.
That's a great purpose. And you mentioned it just now, healthy food.
Yeah.
You know, for some people that might be one of their major purposes or the reasons why they're doing what they're doing. They want to be able to provide for themselves, at least mostly, and be able to sustain themselves with nutrient-dense foods.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get outside of growing your own food or growing, you know, or buying from local growers where you know how their practices.
Right, which is good because then you're supporting local farms. And the other thing is maybe, you know, someone's purpose is to improve. Do what, you know, we talked about, you know, saving the world and feeding the world and all of that. And maybe we can't go that far, but can we do our own part to take some land that has either been not worked at all or has been worked so much that it no longer is producing anything good?
So we're going to regenerate some of the land.
Right. We're regenerating. We're working towards sustainable practices. And I don't mean in an earth worshipy way. I mean in a way that tells us that we know that we are stewards of God's creation and that it's our responsibility to take care of it and for it to be here for generations, for our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren, and leave them a legacy that is better than when we got it.
Absolutely. How about the healthy lifestyle it promotes?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just from a health perspective, we're clean air, clean water. We're removed to a degree from some of the world's trappings. And I think that's important.
I do too. Yeah, and it's certainly a lot easier when you have not only work to do. You know, I guess when I look at all the different projects we do on the homestead and you talk to the children about it, they don't see it as like, we got to go work outside again.
Right.
They really don't. They love doing all of this. Maybe not the daily drudgery of, you know, got to water the animals at the same time. But I don't think that there's any frustration in them. It's just a rote thing that they do. But the other projects and the things that we do, especially through the spring and summer, bring joy.
Right.
To our entire family.
Right.
And really a togetherness, because we're working on improving and
it's regenerating.
It's a contribution that the whole family is making. We're teaching the kids skills
right.
that they wouldn't know. And instead of sticking them in front of the television or in front of video games, you know, for who knows how, especially in the summer, 7-8 hours a day, they're outside working and contributing to the family and to the farm and
right.
learning all of these things so that they too can go on and be self-sustaining and they can start something. And we have prepared them
right.
to do those things.
Right. So another purpose would be that the ability to learn these skills.
Yes.
And then pass them on to your children.
Right.
And hopefully they'll pass them on to their children. So that, you know, that's something that's lost today largely, that you can benefit greatly from homesteading. So that would be another why or a purpose.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is, even if the kids decide they don't want to be farmers, they
right.
still have all these skills. Maybe they just want to start a small garden in their home.
Sure. Yeah. And that's great. So they have those skills, those inherent skills towards self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
So they can definitely do some of those things.
Now, we hope that the next generation of kids do want to stay on a farm, that they do want
right.
to do. But even if they don't, it's our job as parents to help equip them to give them a wider variety of options
right.
out there.
And skills. And I don't care what you do for a living. The ability to grow some of your own food and be self-sufficient in certain ways is invaluable.
Yes.
So I don't care if you are working in a cubicle. It would be great if you knew how to grow food and process animals. And
yes. And if you are working in a cubicle, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all right. Have a dream and work towards, you know, eventually get out of there.
Yes.
And so there's also the stability that it provides in uncertain times.
Yes.
There is a stability there.
Yeah.
There is a bit of confidence that comes with homesteading in uncertain times.
Yeah, knowing that you can still provide basic sustenance for your family.
Yeah, it's
even
important.
If the economy collapses, even if food is no longer being shipped to
right.
your local grocery store, you can still provide for your family.
Yeah, and that's huge.
That is.
That's huge. So for many people, that might be the motivation they need.
Yeah.
To continue doing what they're doing the hard work every day, but everyone else is laughing at them going, just go to the grocery store.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of Noah in the Ark, you know? He's over there building this thing for years, and everyone's looking at him like, what are you doing? Like, there's no water around here.
Right.
And he's preparing for what he knows is coming. And, you know, we don't know when or if a collapse may come or when or if there could be such a great increase in gasoline prices, unlike right now. But an increase in gasoline prices that makes the grocery store almost undoable for most people. It's
right.
like, well, I'm paying $8 for a loaf of bread.
Right.
No longer, I can't even afford to feed my family.
Right, right. Whereas before, it was like, well, it's $2
yeah,
for a loaf
cheap.
Of bread. I don't, you know, why would I grow my own food?
Right. So we're kind of, you know, preparing for these things that, you know, we just do not know where our economy is going. We don't know where gas prices are going simply because we don't own the majority of imported oil. I mean, it's all imported. So
right.
You don't know what's going to happen.
A big chunk of it is definitely. How about the potential streams of income from working land?
Yeah.
You know, that this is an area that is, I think, undervalued or, you know, underutilized.
Mm-hmm.
Is how can we turn our land in the same time as that we're doing it in a sustainable manner, we're regenerating the land, we're being wise stewards of it, then how can we also make an income from it?
Right.
You know, again, it doesn't. Your primary income doesn't necessarily have to be as a corn farmer.
Right.
Right. So and it may just be a side income or a second or a third or a fourth stream of income.
Right. Maybe you just, you know, you're growing for your family, but you realize that you've created such an abundant homestead that you have a lot of extra. Why not turn around and make some money off of
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a great way to provide that for other people, whether it's just neighbors, friends, family. I mean, there's so many pluses to that. And then, you know, providing that income, and maybe it's just enough to help your operation.
Yeah. It just supports it. So basically you're eating for free.
That's right. Or you're eating very, very inexpensively with this nutrient dense food.
Yep.
I mean, there's really no downside. So again, all of these purposes which happen to be ours,
mm-hmm.
Will help those that are homesteading or striving to homestead. They need to develop their purposes and be able to remember that when times get tough.
Yes. And again, this is one of those things where we say, write it down. Write down your purposes for doing what you're doing. And, you know, if you're married and you have a spouse and, you know, you guys sit down together and you create your vision, you create your reasons why, and then you can use those to help each other, to help encourage each other during the times that you're feeling frustrated. And if you're not on a homestead yet and you're still in town and you're still working in that cubicle and you're saving up to try to move out to your homestead, and again, you're feeling frustrated and saying this is never going to happen, go back to your wives and say, no, this is our plan. We're saving for this long, and then we're going to move on to our own homestead or our own property, or we're going to lease some farmland. At least during the time that you're sitting in your cubicle and you're trying to save up, you see the vision and you see the reason why what you're doing right now.
Right.
If you're on your homestead, again, there's going to be frustrating days, and there's going to be days that you feel like you're not getting much accomplished, or you don't have the money to do what you want to do. And maybe you have to stop some projects for the year that you wanted to get accomplished in order to make some extra income. Doesn't matter. Again, look why you're doing what you're doing. Right. So it doesn't discourage you.
Absolutely. Okay. So we have a vision. A dream that we have written down. We have our purposes written down.
Yep.
And so we have that foundation to look at and go, okay, we know why we're doing what we're doing. We have this dream of what would be so awesome if it would look like that. And then, well, how do we get there? How do we get there? You know, yeah. This is the hard work.
This is the hard work.
And so I think the first thing that we would say is that you need to set major goals.
Yes.
Okay. So a major goal is something that's concrete. This is where we get rid of the emotional stuff.
Yeah.
Because we already have that. And we know what that's going to feel like, look like, smell like. And now what we're going to do is, okay, now we're going to get down to the hard work of getting there. And so setting that major goal would be the natural next step. And so we recommend that obviously you set goals in all areas of life, not just homesteading.
Right. You have to have a balanced life. So when we talk about all areas of life, we mean your homestead. We mean your spiritual life, your family, health and fitness, your businesses, your education, your finances, and any other areas that you may have that we didn't cover, but creating a balanced life.
Yeah.
You're setting goals everywhere. You're not so myopic that you're only thinking about homestead and you've neglected your family.
Right. I think what a lot of people have they make the mistake of, they might have some goals, but they'll like set them all in money, for example, or physical fitness. And that's it. And what happens is their life, it gets out of whack.
Yes.
And if your life's out of whack, then you're probably not even going to achieve your goals in any one area either.
Right.
So it's really important to achieve that balance. Cannot emphasize that enough. So assuming that you're going to achieve that balance, well, we're talking about homesteading here, so we're going to just focus on that. But everything we're talking about can apply to all those areas.
Yes. And you should be writing, you know, a couple of major goals, two or three major goals in all of those areas. So again, you're looking for balance in your life. Homesteading should not be completely consuming your all day, every day of the year, and you neglect your spiritual life, or you neglect your family, or your marriage, or your health.
Right.
All of those things really need to be part of your life to make homesteading a joy.
Yeah.
It doesn't become after a while, it becomes a drudgery if you don't balance your life.
Exactly. That's spot on. You know, when we talk about major goals, you talk about, you know, long-term goals, mid-term goals, short-term goals. A lot of times people will talk arbitrarily about these as far as timelines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's your 5-year plan? You mm-hmm. know, what's your 10-year goal, et cetera, et cetera. For us, we like to think in a little bit shorter term time frame than that.
Right.
You know, because it's hard sometimes to focus in on a 5-year goal. Most people don't keep their New Year's resolutions for 1 year, right. Let alone their five or 10 year goals or plans. Very few people actually do that.
Right.
They might have some overarching things that they're working towards, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is that I think you need to look a little shorter term than that.
Right.
So when we think of major goals, we're actually thinking about somewhere between a year and maybe 3 years max. Mm-hmm. Because again, the other principle here is that all your goals need to be nested in and support your dream.
Right.
Right. So if you have a dream in a certain area, like we read about our homestead, when we set our major goals regarding homesteading, they need to fit in there.
Right.
Or obviously, it doesn't make sense.
Right. They need to be part of it, like you said, nested in.
Right.
Not
something completely different.
Right. You're way over here. It's not even related to what you're trying to do.
If we said, one of our major goals is to build a grade A dairy.
Yeah.
That really isn't nested in with what we have laid out for our dream.
Right.
Of sitting on the back porch and seeing this polycultural, all these different, a very diverse homestead is a different dream than, say, having a successful grade A dairy, which, of course, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
That's just not our dream.
Right.
So your goals need to be nested in your dream. So for us, again, major goals would be a time frame of 1 to 3 years. And again, is that a little bit arbitrary? Sure. Some people would say a major or a long-term goal might be 20 years.
Yeah.
I just think that's too long.
I do too. And part of it, like we were saying, is flexibility and the changing of the vision, and the morphing along the way. And if you've set out these goals for 20 years, well, first of all, it's hard to even backdate that enough where you're making daily movement toward a 20-year goal that is so far away you almost can't envision it.
You might be making progress towards that, but it's by accident.
Yeah, that's very difficult. And again, things change. So having a 1-year major goal and then reevaluating and going, well, is this still getting us toward a vision that we have? Is this still part of the vision instead of it being so far away and so long? And he's like, no, we made this goal. We have to stick to it.
Right. Exactly. And so when we design our goals, we like to use, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of the acronym SMART goals. So, and that's not a bad way to design goals. There are other ways. I mean, I think the bottom line is they need to be specific. They need to be realistic or relevant. And they've got to be measurable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we do the whole SMART goals, they're specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and timely. If you have all of those principles inside of your goal, it's a good goal. I mean, you're going to clearly know if you've met it or not.
Right.
There's a specific time frame. It's not just, just kind of generalized.
Yeah.
It's specific.
Right. Exactly.
So, it really drives me bonkers when I read a lot of people's goals. It's like, well, what's your goals for 2016? To be kind, to live a healthy life.
Right.
Well,
what does that mean? Like,
to be better.
Right. How do you define that?
Right.
Yeah.
It's pointless.
You have to get, you have to be specific. Otherwise, you don't even know if you've achieved it.
Right. I mean, I guess if you're going to do that, you might as well, set no goals. That way you won't fail.
Right.
Right. So
well,
to be kind. Well, what does that mean?
To be kinder than I was this year. Right. It's like, well, how are you measuring your kindness from this year? Like, and how are you going to measure next year's kindness?
Right.
How many times you went to the soup kitchen? I don't know.
Right. So some people might go, well, I don't really like the SMART acronym. Well, then just make sure that it, at least your goal is specific enough that you'll know whether or not you achieved it.
Right. You want to know when you hit it.
That's right. Major goals that they're good. Each category, you should have some major goals. 2 to 3 is what we recommend at any one time. Anything more than that, it's getting a little crazy. And I'll be honest, a lot of this is a lot of work.
Yes,
it's a lot of writing down. It's a lot of planning. It's a lot of really thinking. But you know what? That's how people get stuff done.
Yeah, and again, the beauty of having a partner doing this, Sean and I, we can bounce ideas off each other and things, our conversation sparks more, there's the ideas. We create a third, a third mind when two minds come together. Right. No, it's really true, though. As we are talking to each other.
A third mind. There's a really a third
literal. Mind. Yes. Anyway, you know that there's a creativity that comes when there's a synergistic, back and forth discussion of goals and dreams right. and visions. Thank you.
It's synergy, just like you said.
Yes.
You're really achieving synergy, so it's like a third mind.
It's like a third mind.
Okay.
Or a literal third mind.
Yeah. Where is the third mind at? I don't know. Anyway. Okay, so major goals. 1 to 3 years, that's what we use. If you want to do something different, you know, knock yourself out. And it's specific, and it's timely, and it's relevant, it's achievable, all that. So we have to design them well. And there's something else that we use. And I think this is key. This is really important. Every single one of our goals, at least our major goals, that you will always see, and we're going to go ahead and read one for you here. You're going to see in order to on every single one of those goals. All right? The in order to is after the goal. Okay, so we set the goal. We figure something out that we want to do, that we make specific and measurable and achievable and relevant and timely. And then we throw on the backside of that in order to.
It's another why.
That's right.
It's another why.
We assign a why to every single one of those. And that has power in it.
It creates meaning all of a sudden. And it's not just a...
It's a deepness to the goal.
Yeah, it's not a random goal.
Right.
It's like, let's just do that.
We want to grow this much food.
Yeah, and why are we doing that?
Right.
Well, it is powerful.
Right, so why don't we share one? And we have talked about this before because we're kind of using this also a little bit selfishly as a public accountability to help us really work towards achieving this goal.
Yeah.
And we've had this goal since the fall of 2014.
Yep. I think it was August of 2014.
Right. So, I mean, this goal has been with us.
Yeah.
And we are working hard at achieving this major goal.
Yeah. And again, it's so interesting because at the time when we made it, it felt like, oh, that's so, it's 2 years. I mean,
right.
That's so far.
Well, we're,
and now here we are.
Here we are. It's this summer.
Yeah.
Right,
and so it's a lot more pressure on us right now. It's
yeah.
like, okay, we got to move. This summer, we are getting, this spring, we're getting serious about even expanding our annual garden until our perennial garden is producing enough.
You're right. Exactly. And we are, well, we have been. We've been working pretty diligently
yes.
to achieve this goal. And that's why it's a great one to highlight because...
Well, because everything we did last year, all our goals that we accomplished last summer and spring, was all based under this
that's
goal.
That's right. I mean, we made sure. Does it support that goal?
Yeah.
Is it nested inside of it? Is it going to help us get there?
Yeah. And if it didn't, we didn't do the project.
That's right.
I mean,
it was all the way down to, you know, we need to build chicken trackers. Why? In order to work towards this goal.
Right.
Right
exactly.
Here.
So our major homestead goal. By August 1st, 2016, the homestead provides 80% of our family's caloric needs, averaged out over any given week when we are on the homestead, in order to obtain more self-sufficiency, work for the family, reduce financial strain, and to have healthy food to eat.
Right. So let's just break that down real quick. Okay, was that specific? Well, yeah, it was. I mean, it's very specific. 80% of our family's caloric needs. Now, we had to qualify that because, you know, if you're not caring, and again, it's attention to detail. We qualify it and say averaged out over any given week because, you know, you could have one day where we're at a conference somewhere and we're not obviously eating food from our homestead.
Right.
And we want to be true to this goal.
Yes.
And so we said, yes, we'll average it out over any given week. And we also qualified it with when we are on the homestead. So if we go on a week-long vacation, well, obviously over that week, we're not going to achieve that goal.
Right. We're not going to be here. So we're not counting
this
that
doesn't count.
Week
right.
that we're out on family vacation toward this goal.
Right. When we're here... When we're on the homestead over any given week, averaged out over that 1 week, 80% of it will come from this property.
Right.
Not even trading with neighbors, which I think is a wonderful thing and it's great.
Yes.
But 80% comes from
our
this
homestead.
Land. So is it specific? Yeah, it sure is. Is it measurable? Obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We just talked about that. We have a clear metric in order to let us know whether or not we got there. Is it attainable? Yeah, it is. It's a lot of hard work.
Yes.
And it's going to be difficult. But yes, it's attainable. Is it relevant? Of course it is. And then is it relevant to our dream?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. And is it timely? Yes. By August 1st. Okay. Now, for us, we're not making a goal of by August 1st and for that 1 week.
Right.
No, it's from that point on.
Yes.
In order to help us achieve our dream. Okay. Now, what does that mean? That means that by next winter, we're still pulling 80% of our caloric needs.
Right.
From this property. Which means we got to do a lot of food preservation.
Yeah, you're going to be helping.
A lot of canning, honey.
You're going to be helping with canning, just saying.
Well, right. But, I mean, this is how detailed we are in this. This is how important it is to us, is that we're thinking through all these things. And so, therefore, some of our skill goals and things mm-hmm. that we're working on, food preservation, pretty hard.
Yes, food preservation and also, you know, extending the growing season. So that we've got some things set up here on our homestead that can extend the growing season past what we would normally have, which is fairly early in the fall here in northern Idaho. So things that we can do to keep growing lettuces or other greens, broccoli and things like that in hoop houses.
Right.
That can help us.
Absolutely.
Continue to provide food exactly. a little bit later in the season.
Absolutely. And the animals and yep. being able to have meat year round.
Yes.
So it's there's timing issues involved. There's planning and staggering.
Yes, because we can't fit everything into our freezers. No. We can't even fit everything into our larder. I mean, there's limited space too.
Sure.
So
all these things you have to take into account.
Yeah. So yeah, we are staggering animals, and we're trying to do as much as we can to create abundance as much into the year as possible, so that we don't have to quite do as much
right.
canning and preserving of foods. We have some fresh food available as well.
Right. Now, one thing that will help when you're thinking about goals, writing goals, making goals, you know, it's obviously use this acronym SMART. And then we recommend in order to, so putting a purpose behind mm-hmm. achieving that goal. But then also thinking through is like, what does success look like? What does it define success? What does it look like? Now, what that did is that helped us really to write that goal in a specific manner to where we weren't cheating ourselves. We weren't saying, oh, well, you know, we went on vacation for a week, and so we technically didn't meet our goal. We thought through all those things.
Right.
Because we went through success criteria or defined success. And that will help you think through your goals to make sure they're good, because a lot of people can still get and write SMART goals, but not have it still be a good goal.
Right.
All right.
And so, those contingencies planned in.
Right. So that's important. And if you do that, that will really help set the goals. All right. So now that we have that example of that major goal, the next thing I think, the next step or however you want to think about it, is to set some intermediate goals, or we like to say midterm. And short-term goals.
Mm-hmm.
And again, for us, the time frame is probably different from a lot of people that you'll read on goal setting and all those kinds of things. All right. So again, well, you know, a lot of people use those 5, 10, 20 year stuff.
Right.
For us, the midterm is somewhere like 6 to 12 months.
Right.
And then short-term is anything from, you know, 0 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the same criteria applies. So one really good thing, in fact, we're doing this with our son right now, is we're helping him kind of work through the beginnings of running a business, a small business. And we're not starting with a business plan and, you know, financial projections and all this other garbage. We're starting with, what's your dream?
Mm-hmm.
And then, what's your major goal? All right. So now that you have your major goal, let's talk about some midterm and short-term goals. And so what we did is we had him write out some of his goals. And then we says, okay, now I want you to take one of those major goals, put it over here on a separate piece of paper, and restate it. What's your major goal? And he did that. And then underneath that, he's going to start nesting some midterm and some short-term goals under that.
Yeah, that are going to help him eventually get to that major goal.
Right. So as long as you are nesting all these things along, it doesn't matter. Your short-term goal that you're typing out right now is going to support your dream. It's going to support your major goal, and it's going to support your midterm goals.
Right.
And that's important. That's important. You have a lot of people that are all over the place. They'll write down their goals and be like, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds. I want to, you know, get a new Ferrari, and, you know, I want a milk cow. I mean, you know, none of those are kind of no purposes behind them. You know, there's nothing concrete there. I mean, that person may do those things, but it won't work together synergistically.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And there, and again, when you are thinking about, you're setting these midterm goals, you're thinking 6 to 12 months. And so it's not going to be your major goal, but it's going to be a kind of a bigger goal. These aren't going to be, tasks. This is not a task. This is still a goal within a goal.
Right. Right. We haven't gotten to plans of action and milestones and, making to-do lists and just really, really getting things done.
Right.
We're talking goals here.
Right.
So why don't we, let's give an example.
Okay. So we just set our major goal, and normally on a piece of paper, again, like Sean said, we would restate our major goal so that we are reminded what are we nesting under. So we're not getting off track. So one of our midterm goals, in order to achieve our major goal, is to expand our pasture by 2 acres using a silvopasture model by June of 2015 in order to support more animals on the homestead, which is going to help us achieve that 80%.
Right. So, that's a good example, and we could walk through the SMART thing again, but we won't. But it's, you know, it's specific enough, it's measurable, it's timely.
Yep.
And all those things, and it has a purpose. Well, it's so that we can, so that the land can support more animals, which is going to obviously in turn turn into, I mean, in the end, calories.
Right.
Okay, so that's important. And obviously what we're giving you right now is, it's stuff that we've already done, but it's an example from
because we set this in October of 2014.
That's right. And have we accomplished it? Yes, we have. We have. But again, it's a good example.
Right. Another example of a midterm goal is establish a food forest with at least 30 productive trees, bushes, and plants by October of 2015 in order to get a major perennial food production in the future.
Okay, so there you go. Same thing. We could walk through SMART. You could see a purpose in there. It fits and is nested within the major goal, which is nested within the dream.
Yes, which we did accomplish this. We have terraced food forest and linear food forest.
We actually went well beyond that.
Yes, we have over 200 plantings of productive trees, bushes, and plants. But again, it's setting your time frame, setting specifically what your project is going to be, and then accomplishing that through the use of other smaller goals. So now we get on to the short-term goals.
Sure, yeah, let's do it. Again, the basic difference is just time frame. Yes, it's arbitrary, but we do it. 6 months or less is short term. 6 to 12 months is midterm.
Mm-hmm. So an example of a short term goal, and again, we set this in October of 2014, is to build light, portable, inexpensive infrastructure by March of 2015. Basically, fixed chicken coop, a mobile chicken coop, a rabbit hutch, 2 chicken tractors, 2 rabbit tractors, all of this in order to facilitate layers, meat birds, and meat rabbits. And again, this increases our meat production on our homestead.
Right. How about one more short term that we talked about?
Okay. Establish and maintain an egg layer flock of at least 20 birds with production by March 2015 to become self-sufficient in eggs.
Okay. So again, we were able to accomplish all of those things.
Yeah.
And I think we've got the or been able to give them the gist of how this is working together. Hopefully they can see that.
Yes, because all these goals are connected and they work together to support the major goal.
All right. But then, you know, the question is, and this is always the challenge, well, then how do you actually get stuff done?
Right.
How do you get stuff done? I mean, this is, so much has been written about this, you know, as far as productivity and efficiency and effectiveness and all that. And I think an entire library is yet to come, because this was a never-ending topic. Now, for us, what it comes down to is detail planning and just knocking it out and keeping it at it every single day.
Right. Well, and it's great to have goals, but if you don't have a plan to actually achieve those goals, you're not going to get anything done.
Right.
You're not going to get anything done. We could sit there and look at our goals every day and go, wow, these are really good goals.
These are really good goals.
These are great goals.
Smart goals. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But we have to make a plan.
Yeah. And then pretty soon you're like, well, why are we just laying in bed and not doing anything?
Because it's comfy and we have a really great view.
Right. Exactly.
No, totally kidding.
So you have to come up with a plan. And this is this is associated with routines and setting up, you know, working day to day, you know, accomplishing your to-do lists, setting milestones, setting a plan up, doing project planning. I mean, there's so much here. And so we're not going to be able to cover everything about how to get stuff done. And honestly, there's so many different programs out there on how to do it and how to stay organized and all of that. I mean, the best advice I think we can give you is that you find a plan, a way to do this, and that you ruthlessly execute that way.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, find one that works for you. Some people work better with paper. I'm a paper person. I like having paper. Sean likes things on his iPad. And we have a shared calendar. You know, we share Evernotes. And we do put almost everything digitally as well. But I still like to have a little paper calendar.
There's been times when I've really liked paper, too.
Yeah, well, when you do your daily to-do list, that's primarily where...
Yeah.
Your to-do lists are on paper. And you like that because you like to be able to look back at your to-do list.
Well, yeah, I think that's important.
I do too.
Yeah.
But I like keeping even a paper calendar. And we can't share that really. Mine's kind of girly looking and
Right. Right.
So we do put everything digitally on a calendar so that we can always see what's coming up and what we have planned for the week and can coordinate and have our meetings and know what our plan is for the week.
Yeah, I think that's key. And again, there's many ways to do this. The bottom line is, if you will find one way and then do that,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be successful.
Yes.
I mean, there's 100 different ways to do it. But finding that way and then sticking to it is the key. You'll run into people like, well, I tried Evernote. I tried, you know, collaborative calendars. I tried Outlook. I tried all these different apps. I've tried all this other stuff. And you're just not doing it.
Right.
I mean, you could go back to a piece of paper, write stuff down, and do it, and you'd be successful.
Right, because that's probably one of the biggest challenges is consistency and sticking to something when the feeling of fun has worn off.
Right.
You know, you have to get yourself into the habit. You have to get yourself into these patterns, and so you're doing it now without thought. But it takes several weeks and sometimes a couple of months of daily doing these tasks and forcing yourself to do them
right.
before you're creating the paths
before
in your brain.
Before it becomes automatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go through an example.
Okay.
So we're going to show you kind of how we do it. And so if we take a goal, let's just take one of our, I don't know, either a midterm or short-term goal.
Okay. Let's take a midterm goal, to establish a food forest with at least 30 productive trees, bushes, and plants by October 2015 in order to start getting major perennial food production in the future.
Okay. Perfect. All right. So if we take that goal that we just restated, and then what we want to do is create a plan. And creating a plan doesn't have to be so complicated and sophisticated as a lot of project planning software can be. And I've got experience with project planning quite a bit, actually, both formal and just kind of the way that I've come to do it. But a plan can be simply listing out all of the tasks that need to be done in order to accomplish that goal.
Right. And it's always interesting because when we're sitting down talking about all the steps that need to be done, many times we'll say, okay, well, you know, in the food forest thing, we'll think, well, we'll have to order the trees. It's like, well, before we order the trees, what do we need to do? And sometimes these things spark the, oh, before we can do that, we have to do this. And so you're writing all of those down and then figuring out the order in which they need to be accomplished.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's actually a pretty cool little technique you can use, whether it's on paper or a whiteboard, doesn't really matter. You can put the end thing that needs to be done. Okay, so if, like you just said, plant the food forest. All right, and then you think, okay, well, what do we need to do to plant the food forest?
We need trees.
We need trees. Okay, so we got to do an order. So you have this circle at the end that says plant food forest. And then now there's a backwards line that goes to another circle that says order trees. And then maybe there's another line that goes to another circle that says determine location, et cetera. And then even now you go back from that. Before you can, you go back to that next circle, and I hope I'm explaining this okay, with that circle that says determine location. And then you can draw another circle behind that one that says research or test soil, for mm-hmm. example. And then before you can test soil, you got to have a soil kit. So maybe you draw another line behind that one.
Right.
And that could be all of a sudden what you have is a task list in the order that you should do it.
Right. It makes it so much easier. And it's basically brainstorming. I mean, you're sitting down. It really does help, again, to sit and brainstorm and talk about it, because there are sometimes there are steps that you wouldn't think about had you not sat there and talked to somebody else.
Right.
You know, that you go, oh, wait a minute. We don't even know, you know, where we're going to plant this thing. Like, we've ordered trees. We've done all this stuff. And we don't even know
right.
if it's a good spot to plant right. our trees.
Or all of a sudden, the
trees
40
arrive.
Or 50 trees arrive. And like, oh, no.
Oh, no. You know, where are we going to put them? What's our plan again?
Right.
So, you know, the talking back and forth and the brainstorming with a partner or with somebody else or even, you know, someone who's out helping you with your land, just talking with people can help you think of all of those ideas. So let's talk about what our plan of action.
Okay. So some people might call it, you might recognize this as a work breakdown structure. I don't want to use that. We're just going to call it a plan of action.
Okay. So one of the first things that we did is we researched the microclimate and then good cultivars for this area. That's really important. It doesn't matter if we love
avocados.
Avocados or a Georgia peach. It's not going to grow here.
Right.
So you can order all those and those things will die.
That's right.
Our climate's not good for that.
So yes, absolutely. Understanding the microclimate. Because again, you know, we live in Zone 6, the USDA hardiness zone, but that's not our particular microclimate. That's not our particular soils, etc.
Yeah, and within even our homestead and our property, we have different microclimates.
Of course.
That can support different species that another area couldn't.
By the way, I just got to mention this as an aside. It's so fascinating. We love to watch our property, to observe it, to really observe it, especially whether it's water flows or snow, where the snow is melting first, where mm-hmm. it's going to melt last. All those things help you determine microclimate. So wherever you are, if you've got snow on the ground, be watching those things. And it's really fascinating right now because we're watching our swales start to open up first.
The snow is melting first in the areas where there's more moisture.
Right, where there's more moisture. Where the water is actually starting to surface flow, mm-hmm. the snow is starting to come away, and then as things start to warm up, we're going to start to see those first bare spots of the earth that are the warmest, the sunniest spots, and then the last areas where the snow is going to leave, we're going to be able to see where the coldest and the most shaded spots are.
And you should be writing this stuff down.
Yes.
Keeping a journal, do something, take pictures. It doesn't matter how you want to document it, but write that stuff down because that's telling you a lot about your land, stuff that you really should know.
Now, the way that we do that, again, totally going off topic here, is we keep a journal, what we call a permafarm journal, and we put all of the major events that occur or different things. It's just a quick, like a captain's log.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a journal of what things have happened and when, first frost, last frost, and much, much, much more.
And that is on a shared Evernote folder.
Right.
So that several of us can contribute to that.
Right.
It's not one person that has to go in and keep this journal.
Right. Exactly.
So that's always good. Okay. So the next thing is research and determine the best location for a food forest.
Right.
After that, determine our budget. That's
right.
always important because, we could have a dream of having 500.
It's like this 1 acre food forest. Oh, yeah,
we got $100. Yeah, that's not going to work. Right. So, yeah, you have to bring, unfortunately, money into the whole equation. Plan and establish water in place for irrigation with water access and swales.
Right. So, yeah, obviously, all things need to be thought about.
Mm-hmm. Fence in the area that we're going to be putting trees, because around here we have deer and we have moose, and they will come and they will destroy and eat everything.
And as you can hear us kind of reading these, you'll get the order in which we're laying these out. And we have to think about that. Okay, what needs to be done before what? You know, some of these things are sequential. Some of them can be done simultaneous.
Right.
But in general, we put them sequentially.
Right. Okay, and then we're going to prepare the area with animals. We're using chickens and ducks to go in and kind of work the land and drop their nutrients.
That's right.
Then we're going to prepare the area with cover crops. Okay, and then we're planning our food forest layout, which is really important too. Making sure that you don't have trees that need to work together for...
Just as the synergistic use, they're going to work together.
Well, yeah, and then the male and female
trees, pollinators.
The pollinators, They have to be close enough to each other. So you have to work to lay it out. Don't just randomly plant your tree.
Oh, I'm going to put this walnut tree over there, and then 100 yards over here, I'm going to put this other walnut. No, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work. Then we order the appropriate productive and support species.
Right. And a good thing we didn't do that first.
Yeah.
Right. And then, obviously, we wouldn't have been able to do that first.
Right. And then plant productive and support species.
Right. Now, I mean, we could go on and on. There was a whole lot more to it and into the details. But these are some of the major tasks that we need to do to be able to accomplish that goal.
Yes.
And that's how you basically, it's that simple.
Yes.
It's that simple.
Well, and what's beautiful about having this list is that then you can go, okay, so let's put this into our week.
Exactly.
And you know, since we do have quite a few children who are very capable of doing many things, we are able to sit down at our meeting on Sunday night, and we generally have that from spring through early fall because we have so many projects going on.
We dropped off a little bit in the winter, but that's okay.
Yeah, because we really don't have much going on in the winter. It's more maintenance, and everybody knows what they're supposed to do. But as the projects begin, we have those meetings, and then we say, okay, Joseph, you're going to have this week. We want you to accomplish these things, and you know, Melissa, you're going to do these. And we're going to be working on this, and we'll be over here, you know. So we all know what we're going to be doing, and we don't have to do it all.
Right.
You know, and I think that's another thing, is that a lot of kids...
They're learning planning. They're learning goal setting. They're learning how to manage a project.
Yeah. And remember skills. That you want your children to learn these things, and you want them to learn a little bit of independence, too. So you don't have to be doing everything with them, but you're guiding them along.
Right.
If they're not capable, sure, you do it with them.
Sure, then have them come with you and go, okay, today you're going to help me, you know.
You're digging holes.
Right.
You know, whatever it may be. But again, you're teaching your children some independent work and utilizing them and letting them contribute to the family and the homestead.
Yeah, and we'll probably get more into this later. Maybe we'll do an entire podcast on project planning, because that is important. It's so important on how you apply all those tasks to a calendar and come up with a schedule.
Yeah.
You schedule out the work, and that's an entire art in itself. But you really get the idea of developing a plan, and it can be as simple as listing out all the tasks and then putting them in the order, the sequential order that you need to accomplish them in.
Right. And this is, this not only is super important, but it can be very complicated. You know, it's an in-depth process. This is not, you should not be taking this casually.
Right.
You need to really be sitting down and really thinking about this stuff. And this is part of the reason why we try to utilize the months that we're down, that we don't have as many projects going on, particularly winter, to really sit down and plan out our next year.
Right.
I mean, that's our major planning time, where we're trying to get everything done and...
Right.
So and get it written down.
If you will do that, that will help you get stuff done.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think the next thing that really helps people get stuff done, and you've mentioned it, is, you know, developing those good habits,
mm-hmm.
Is developing routines.
Yes.
So whether it's a weekly routine or in a daily routine, you probably have some aspects of both of those, or you should.
Yes.
You should.
Well, weekly routines are nice because if you, you know there are certain things, at least in our life, certain things that we have to do each and every week, podcast, we have, writing, blogging, and then, of course, all of our homestead stuff and things that we want to do with our family, do our movie night or game night with the family, that we just automatically are set into our calendar every week.
Right.
They're just there.
They're there.
They're
and
there.
It becomes habit and it becomes routine.
Yes.
And that's good because the other thing that it helps you do is it helps you maintain balance.
Yes.
So your weekly routine, you're building in balance by doing these routines. So you don't get hyper-focused on
one thing.
Building your homestead or making money.
Yeah.
So the balance is important.
Yeah. And, the human mind is always looking for the most efficient way to get things done. Always. So if at first establishing these routines and actually following them is going to be the biggest challenge. But once you've done that, your mind starts gearing toward that almost automatically without thinking. Because it's looking, that's most efficient. That's what I've done over and over. There's a trigger almost like I wake up and this is what my body does because you've trained it that way.
Right.
So.
And that's not a bad thing. That's
no.
That's a good thing.
Especially if these are good habits that you've established.
Right.
Now, if you've got bad habits, now you need to teach that trigger to do a better habit. You want to get rid of, like say you get in bed and every single time you get in bed, you turn on the television. If that's a trigger for you, now you need to make something different. And it's going to be hard at first.
You might have to remove the TV.
You get rid of the TV. You get in bed and you pick up a book and that's your new trigger. And your trigger is this. And now I do this activity and this is the reward that I get from it.
Right.
I feel better about myself. I'm learning something new. And I sleep better because I don't have a stimulation of the television in my face right before I go to bed.
That's an excellent example.
Yeah.
Right, so a couple of examples of weekly routine, and we won't cover our entire weekly or daily routine, but maybe we can give one or two of each.
Okay. So again, creating balance. We watch a family movie or play a family game every Friday night with homemade pizza and popcorn.
It's just what we do.
Yeah, and everyone knows. Now, of course, we don't necessarily, there are Friday nights that we have a meeting or we have something else we need to do. So occasionally that's bumped to a different night, but that is our weekly, that's what's everyone knows Friday night, pizza, popcorn, movie or game.
Right.
That's just it. And then, write out and reflect on our goals on Monday. Okay. The things that you think about most of the time become your reality.
Right.
So if you're reviewing your goals and your whys and your vision and your dream, that will become a reality for you.
Yeah. And we can't emphasize that enough. I mean, most people, they write out their goals and then what ends up happening is 6 months later, they bump into them and go, Oh yeah.
I
totally forgot about that. So it's really important to review these things on a regular or routine basis.
Yes. As far as a daily routine, read the Bible every morning upon waking. And then we follow whatever our current reading plan is, and create my to-do list every evening before bed. If you put that into a routine, that will be something that's automatic for you. You have your to-do list, you get up in the morning, and you know, besides your routines, what else you have to accomplish that day.
Exactly. That's your to-do lists are your variables. Those are the thing, they are outside of your routine because your routine is going to be done because that's what you do every day.
Right.
And your to-do lists are the things outside of that.
Right. So as far as to-do lists go, we like to keep what we call closed to-do lists. And this means that because there's nothing more frustrating
than the endless
to-do list. I mean, it never ends. Someone mentions something to you and you go, oh, yeah, I have to do that. And you write it at the bottom of your to-do list that you made for today. And now your to-do list is, 20 items that for a fact you're not going to get done. And you just keep adding to it and adding to it and adding
That's
to
just
it.
It's a monster. It's a song that never ends.
It's a song that never ends. Let's not get started on that. It's really frustrating. And so we, years ago, started using closed lists, meaning you write your list the night before and then you write a line at the bottom. If something comes up that needs to be done, you put it underneath that line and it goes on the next day's list.
That's right.
You don't add it to today's list.
Yeah, absolutely. Do not need to do it today, then don't. do it, put it on tomorrow's list.
Right.
Or if it happens to be something that, okay, well, it needs, you know, maybe it needs to be done in 3 days, then put it on the calendar.
Yes.
Okay, so get into the habit. And it sounds weird. A lot of people will say, well, I mean, I can just knock that out real quick. Like, no. Get into the habit of using a closed list so that you can focus on the things that need to get done that day. Because, like you said, otherwise you end up with the endless
list. It never ends. And then you're not even able to prioritize because you just have an ongoing list.
Right.
If you have a closed list, you can actually prioritize, or you can decide, well, that will be done really quick, even though it's not the most important, but I want to get that done out of the way so I don't have to worry about it later.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if you're in a cubicle, if you work in an office and you have an inbox, this is what I recommend as well. It's very similar to a closed to-do list, is you have two inboxes. You have what you're going to do today, and then everything that comes in goes into that other inbox that is to be done tomorrow. Otherwise, again, you could have the endless inbox. Now, are there things that come up that you absolutely have to do? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course they do. And whether it's in an office or on the homestead, you know, those quote-unquote emergencies come up and they have to be done today. Well, then do it. But then go right back to your closed list or your inbox. And again, if it doesn't need to be done today, put it in that next box. You will be more efficient this way, I guarantee you.
Yes. Yeah, you really will. And the one thing I am going to say, too, is that it's don't get married to the to-do list to the point that if you see that there's a need of a neighbor or somebody, you know, just shows up and they need to visit or they're interested in things, that you go, well, I have too many things to do.
Right.
I can't help you. You know, be open to those things and realize that relationship should come before your to-do list or even your goals. You're helping your neighbors and being available to people and building relationships is really important. The only reason I mention that is because my years as a homeschool mom, I knew many, many other moms who would absolutely, they do not answer the phone, they don't answer the door, they don't, you know, do anything between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. because that's their school hours. And, you know, with young mothers needing help or people wanting to see how do you school or needing to talk or needing to have someone to pray for them and they're closed out because it's like, no, this is our school hours. And I always had an open door policy, and some days I didn't get everything done I needed to get done, but I was...
You made an impact on people's lives.
Yes, and I was blessed through helping them and being available to others. So don't be married to your
to-do list. It's the same thing with homesteading as well. You know, if you're knocking things out, you're getting things done on your list, and a neighbor calls because their plow broke and they need some help, drop your list.
Yeah.
Go help the neighbor.
You need to care about people more than you do about your to-do list.
Absolutely. That's a great way to end right there.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Can you think of anything else? I think we covered a lot.
The only one last thing.
Sure.
Don't get discouraged if you get off your routines. It does, you know, you have an off day, an off week, an off month. Get right back on and start where you were, and you know, don't go, well, see, I'll just never do it. Don't get discouraged. We're all people, and when things come up or we go on vacation and the routine is completely thrown off, sometimes it takes a little while to get back into the routine.
Yes.
Maybe you had family come visit and suddenly, you know, the kids are going, well, I don't want to go back and do work now. Just get back into the routine and start moving through it, and don't feel discouraged.
That's a great point. If you've been sitting on, you know, all of a sudden you look back at your goals and you're like, well, I haven't done anything towards them in the last 6 months.
Doesn't matter.
So start, you know, come up with a plan and start getting stuff done and keep at it every day.
Yeah.
Our verse for today comes from Hebrews chapter 4, verse 12. For the word of God is living and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the division of soul and spirit, and of joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart.
And then our shout out today goes to Buster and his family in Kansas. Thanks for listening.